move on to the third case of this morning, United States against Whitsitt. Mr. O'Malley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Tom O'Malley here for the defendant appellant, Jermaine Whitsitt. This case presents two issues to the Court. The first is, was there a reasonable suspicion that Jermaine was presently armed and dangerous, which justified the frisk and search by Officer Woods? The second issue, which goes beyond that, was the scope of the search that was ultimately performed by Officer Woods excessive? On February 13, 2005, Officer Jester received a phone call that a young woman was in a car and a man wouldn't get out of the car. Officer Jester located the car within several minutes at the corner of Berry and Calhoun Street in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was 2 a.m. Officer Jester was met by Miss Sparkle Ramsey, who was the driver of the car, and Miss Ramsey said, "Hey, this fellow's in the back of the car. He won't get out." She, I believe, said he had been in there for, I think I'm quoting it correctly, about an hour, or perhaps it was a half hour. It doesn't seem to matter. Officer Jester went to the back passenger seat of the car and asked Jermaine to get out. Jermaine left the car. He stood up, and he raised his hands to about chest high. It's on the video that we've supplied.
Yeah, I watched that video, but the other, actually, I think you're the first lawyer who's ever inserted a DVD of a video in the actual brief, and it was very useful. But anyway, the officer testified, did he not, that the second Mr. Whitsitt gets out of the car, he's pretty much overwhelmed with the odor of alcohol and the like, reason to think that public intoxication is an issue. And he already knows from Ms. Ramsey that this man's making a nuisance of himself. Why isn't that enough right away to conduct the kind of search that's done, a real search, a search incident to an arrest?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, as the district court held, and of course with this Mr. Whitsitt agrees, there is no evidence in the record that he was going to be arrested for public intoxication. That was not argued by the government, and in fact, it was testified by Officer Jester, or could have been Officer Woods, that we weren't going to arrest him for public intoxication.
That's a subjective point. Objectively, it sounds as though there was, in fact, probable cause to arrest for that offense.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but I don't think that there's any evidence in the record to support that, but for the fact that he was overwhelmed, as you correctly point out, there was a strong odor of alcohol when he stepped from the car. I think, though, at that point, Your Honor, the next question is, what did Jermaine do? And he lowered his hands, and immediately the officer said something. We don't know. It's not audible on the DVD, but Jermaine raises his hands right back up, and then he places them on the trunk of the car. He complies with everything the officer told him to do. The officer said, "Where's your wallet?" He told him.
Why does this make any real difference here?
The
situation is he's outside the car.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I don't see how he has any reasonable expectation of privacy for that automobile when he was uninvited. Invited initially, but for the next hour he wouldn't get out of the car.
Yes, Your Honor.
She didn't want him in the car.
Correct. There's no expectation of privacy in the automobile itself. But as the district court held, but for the fact that he was searched, we've got a fruit of the poisonous tree, a scenario here. He's searched, and the district court holds that if the search is illegal, then the ammunition goes, and so goes the weapon, because the...
I don't know why that necessarily would even...
The officer never went back to look for the weapon until the ammunition was discovered, Your Honor.
But he has no interest whatsoever in the car. I mean,
that's
he
correct,
can't suppress
right.
things that are found in the car. So if the officer wants to stand there and look into the car, maybe Ms. Ramsey could have complained about it, but she's not here. I mean,
correct, Your Honor. But the fact is Ms. Ramsey did not complain about threats from Jermaine or any nuisance or actions with a weapon. And
well, she complained that he was being a nuisance. She solicited
yes.
the help of the police. They came and gave the help. They do this pat down, which is either a pat down, in which case, you know, your analysis one would have to work through, or it's actually at least objectively justifiable as a search incident to an arrest, in which case there's really nothing to say. But in any event, they're going to find the gun without any argument Mr. Whitsatt can make.
I believe, Your Honor, that the court held, and I'm quite sure that it held, that but for the search, they would not have found the weapon.
Why is that? Because the weapon was not on him. The weapon was sitting there in the car.
Correct, Your Honor. But the officer that found the weapon testified that he did not go back and look for it until he learned that the other officer who conducted the search, Officer Woods, had found the ammunition. And it was that finding that caused him to go back to the car and look.
Well, he actually kind of calls over to the other guy and says, hey, you know, something. You can see the other guy peek down into the car. And immediately he reaches down and pulls out the gun.
Correct, Your Honor. The issue, I think, that though is Terry requires that there be some indicia, some reasonable suspicion that the officer be, that the detainee be presently armed and dangerous before the search is conducted.
No. It's a protective search. You don't have to have a reasonable suspicion that somebody's lugging a gun if you're doing a pat down. The general theory is almost anybody can be carrying a gun. A routine traffic stop is what kills a hell of a lot of police officers.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this, put this down as a routine. It wasn't. It was extraordinary because the ladies wanted him kicked out of the car. But the fact that he's protecting himself doesn't require that he have a subjective belief that somebody's carrying a gun. It's just what they do.
Your Honor, I respectfully, sir, I would disagree with that. On this court's holding in United States v. Brown, which was a 2000 case, 232 F3rd, 589, there's a two-prong analysis to the Terry stop. One is the stop itself justified.
That justifies a pat-down, stop itself.
I think this court has held differently.
Well, the Supreme Court hasn't, because Terry very explicitly says you can do a pat-down.
Your Honor, I believe Terry requires that there must be, one, a reasonable suspicion for the stop, and two, secondly, a reasonable suspicion for the frisk.
When you do a Terry stop, do they do a pat-down, sir?
It's not ipso facto, Your Honor.
Oh.
I believe it's got to
be
separately justified.
We must be reading two different cases.
Yes, Your Honor. The other issue that is before Your Honors is, once the pat-down takes place, was it excessive? And the video clearly shows the officer going right into his pockets. I mean, he goes right into that pocket, in his coat pocket. Now, when he gets to, and then he goes to the other coat pocket, and he cannot give any articulable suspicion for going into the coat pockets. He gives none. He doesn't remember what it is. He said when he got to the pants pocket that had the bullets in it, or the ammunition, he recalled that he felt something that felt like a bullet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure it's so clear on the other thing. People are wandering back and forth, and, you know, their bodies are in the way of the camera from time to time. But the testimony, anyway, is that he feels the hard thing, and then he goes into the pocket. And, of
yes,
course,
Your
he
Honor.
Finds a number of bullets at that point.
Correct, Your Honor. The issue is, first of all, is that readily apparent contraband? It's not contraband in and of itself. So happens to Jermaine Whitsett it is, because he's a convicted felon, but they didn't know that at the time.
You're not arguing that officers don't have an interest in finding bullets, you know, in someone's pocket.
Well, the court raises that question. Can they, you know, it's not contraband.
You have a right to have a bullet. I mean, an officer, there's a first time for everything. I would feel uncomfortable saying they couldn't find bullets.
But the second question, I think the more important question, is what was the nature of it? Was it readily apparent? He squeezed that pocket for a minimum of 10 seconds, up to 24 seconds before he went in.
Gives it a pretty good feel, yes. I mean, I agree with that. Anyway, you're in your cluster.
I keep coming back to the issue of why this is even important at all in this case. And the question, again, when you look at his lack of any connection to this automobile, justifiable connection, and then when he's out and the weapon, the gun is found, he says, it's not mine. Does he have to say it's his gun before he has any standing to argue suppression of it?
No, Your Honor. That isn't the scenario that we're arguing.
Well, but
Go ahead, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
If the Fourth Amendment is going to protect your rights to be free from an unreasonable search and seizure, and whatever is seized here didn't belong to him, according to him, where is his standing to raise that issue?
I think the district court said it best. If the Fourth Amendment was violated as of the search, it's on page 7 of its opinion, the evidence retrieved from the vehicle as a direct consequence of the evidence found during the illegal search, which in turn led to Whitsett's arrest, must be suppressed as fruit of the poisonous tree, citing Long Sun. That was the Judge Lee's holding, and of course we agree with that.
Yeah, we review those kind of legal determinations de novo.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. O'Malley. Mr. Holler.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The officers in this case did not violate any of the defendant's Fourth Amendment rights through their pat-down, through their discovery of the bullet, or through their discovery of the gun in this case. I think the Court has, all three of you have identified various reasons why that's the case. In the first place, as he comes out of the car, as you did point out, Judge Wood.
Which of the three do you like?
I like all of you, Judge Bauer.
That's a very diplomatic answer.
Good way to put it.
He did reek of alcohol. I did want to clarify one factual thing, which was that Officer Jester never said we weren't going to arrest the defendant. What he actually says on page 16 of the transcript is, well, if we didn't arrest him for public intoxication, if we decided, hey, this situation is calmed down and we're just going to have you go your way and you go your way, we certainly didn't want him wandering around the streets of downtown Fort Wayne, you know, at least mildly intoxicated with a weapon on him. So that's all that is said. There's no question, and it doesn't develop that way, although they do end up giving him a breathalyzer test, and he blows a .30, which is exceptionally intoxicated. So I find it very difficult to believe under those circumstances that he ever would have been released. And as we cited in Kentucky versus Rawlings in the Jamarillo case, under those circumstances, a search immediately prior to an arrest is sort of the same as a search incident to an arrest, and the full search would be available. But again, as you pointed out, Judge Bauer, I think, you know, I don't know, maybe there's some small window of Terry cases where you have reasonable suspicion to believe they committed mail fraud and they aren't in any respect dangerous. But in the run-of-the-mill Terry case, a pat-down is going to be appropriate. And even if not, under these circumstances, the district court, Judge Lee, adequately showed many reasons why a pat-down was appropriate. The defendant reeks of alcohol. He's at least making motions to put his hands in his pockets, whether they ever get there or not. He's displayed clear, bizarre behavior by staying in this car for an hour, making a nuisance of himself to Ms. Ramsey, refusing to leave, refusing to tell her where he wants to go. I mean, it has to have been getting pretty bad for her to have called 911 after him sitting in her car for half an hour to 45 minutes.
Now, there's some testimony, is there not? I couldn't really tell from the tape or the DVD that he was defiant to a certain degree with the police officer. Is that correct?
He was defiant. The testimony, there's two elements of testimony, and the one, and this may have been an error in our brief, Officer Jester says he's combative initially, so that he's somewhat resistant to getting, and I think that is borne out by the videotape, he's somewhat resistant getting out of the car. He is initially resistant to putting his hands in.
He was probably having a hard time getting out of the car.
That may be true as well, but of course it's the perception of the officer, not what actually happens. There was testimony that he said, so you're going to beat me up, you're going to beat me up. That actually occurred after the pat-down, and if that was unclear in the brief.
That's what it looked like to me from the video, anyway, that he's very compliant at first, and then he begins to realize he's going to be arrested, and he decides he doesn't like that.
I think it's a perception issue, and even if the court wanted to say, well, you know, I think the district court credited Officer Jester's testimony to the effect that he did not perceive him as being compliant. And it's really the officer's perception as to whether someone is being compliant or not. The district court, certainly this court on appeal, doesn't review the tape and say, well, if I was in the officer's shoes, you know, the district court was able to observe Officer Jester and determine from his testimony what he genuinely believed at the time. So the pat-down is reasonable for all of those reasons, and the scope is not excessive either. In the first place, I don't think that the issue matters, either for the standing reason that Judge Evans has cited, although we didn't go that route in our brief. But furthermore, what the testimony is, and I think this also is borne out by the tape, is he's feeling the pocket. He says, I have a bullet. And this is also the testimony of both Officer Woods and Officer Straub. I have a bullet. That's when Officer Straub, you can tell, he makes some comment to the other officer who looks in the window. It doesn't take him. He's not even using his flashlight at that point or anything. Sees the gun and pulls it out of the car. Now, as he's doing that, the other officer, Officer Woods, is pulling the bullet out. But, I think a bullet is a weapon. I mean, yes, by itself, you're going to have to load it into a gun, but it's contraband. The fact that it's not illegal under Indiana law for everyone to walk around the streets with bullets doesn't mean that in a Terry stop situation, you don't want to get bullets away from potentially dangerous individuals. I mean, a firecracker isn't dangerous unless you light it. And as I'm sure you all know, it's very easy to own and possess firecrackers in Indiana. But I think if someone during a Terry stop had a firecracker, we wouldn't say, well, they don't have a match, so we're going to let them keep it while we investigate the situation. So if the court has any further factual or legal questions, I'm happy to answer them. But we believe that no Fourth Amendment rights of Mr. Whitsitt were violated, and this court should affirm the judgment.
Thank you. I'll give you one more minute. Your time had expired, but if you have a quick last point.
By way of rebuttal, I think the only issue I would raise would be towards the second, the scope of the search. I do maintain that the 12 seconds or 10 seconds of squeezing, kneading the pocket before going in is excessive, and obviously, under both Terry and this court's decision in Rivers, I believe, I don't have the site in front of me, but it was cited in my brief, I think it's a 1999 case, that the nature of the contraband must be readily apparent to the officer that's detaining the person who's being searched. It couldn't have been readily apparent. That's a long squeeze and a long time to knead that pocket before he goes in and decides that it's a bullet. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
No, thank you. The case will be taken under advisement.
Thank you, Your Honors.